Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for this episode with Ira Harris. Remember, new shows are posted on Mondays and Thursdays. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes and YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show: CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. Today I spoke with futures trader and author of the blog Notes from Underground, Ira Harris. With all of this talk about the U.S. possibly headed for a recession, I kicked off today's chat by asking Ira what he thinks. We talked about how Ira would trade an economic slowdown and why he recently bought gold, and he shares some insight on Australian dollar and copper. We discussed how we're both adapting to trading in this political news environment. Ira gives us his thoughts on the trade war, and last but not least, we chatted about Rick Santelli's latest interview with Judy Shelton. So without further ado, let me take you right to the interview with Ira. Ira, are we headed for a recession?
Anthony, it's people ask me that question, and I don't like to get into that argument because I don't know how to define it, and I know that's not what you're looking for. Are we looking into an economic slowdown? I think so, yes. I thought that Trump would was looking to bail this out with a huge infrastructure program, but now he's willing to put that on hold to play politics with it. So I think we're going to go to a slowdown. Is it a recession? I don't define it by two negative quarters of GDP. That's not the way I look at it. If we were to slow down and jobs were stopped growing and actually unemployment started to go up, even though we didn't technically get into a recession, we're in an economic slowdown. Let me turn it another way. People said, oh, Germany avoided a recession because they avoided that second quarter of negative growth. They had 0.1. Well, what is that? You know, such a silly definition.
Yeah.
It's such a silly definition. But the media needs to sell a headline. If it bleeds, it leads. A recession bleeds, so it leads. I'm not of that ilk, but I think we're going to go into somewhat of a slowdown here.
You say that you can't define it, or you don't want to define it by the consecutive quarters of negative GDP.
Right.
But
right. Yeah.
What would be a way for you to define it? And you and I have talked about this before. Is it the inverting of the 210 yield curve?
Well, that would come beforehand, and I don't think we're going to see that. It need not take place because the Fed could actually, and they're talking about it, they could steepen the curve by front-loading all their purchases, everything the Fed buys, to within 0 to 2 years, and that would leave the back end much more subject to market forces, and they would be controlling the short end. So, which would result in a bull steepener, which I would kind of like to see. In fact, I'm trying to set myself up for that. It's been a very arduous trade, but that's what the Fed would have to do, and it would take the Fed admitting that they've been wrong about many things. And, you know, that's not easy for policymakers, and especially those who come from the academic world, to do. They don't like to admit that they're wrong. There's always a Steve Leisman counterfactual to bail them out. But, you know, I'm a trader and I'm an investor. I don't have that prerogative of counterfactuals. I have to react to what is, and that's what I have to do. I can't wait for X amount of time. You know, the classic definition of a recession is from the National Bureau of Economic Research, the NBER, which is two negative quarters in a row of GDP growth. But that's backward looking anyway, so that does nothing for me. Nothing for me. So if I'm predicting a recession, I'm loading up on things that I think are going to respond to it.
So you mentioned that you believe that we are headed for an economic slowdown, though. So how do you go about trading that?
Well, you know what? I think what you're seeing is like some people are getting short copper. Because copper, that chart has turned dismal very quickly. And it's just not with the Chinese tariffs, because the response of China to the tariffs is, of course, to ramp up their own domestic spending. So that should actually help the copper prices. So something, I think people are using that, the copper as a derivative to make a play on a slowing economics. They see it in Europe. They see China slowing down a little bit. And of course, when China slows down, until you get the stimulus, it affects a lot of other places. And I think that's where copper is playing out, as well as the Australian dollar. The Australian dollar, because it's so natural resource-based economy and has been such a great story for quite a while, based on the growth that China has done in Asia, I'm looking, now the Australian dollar actually turned higher, but the dollar has turned lower across the board. But we have a fairly weak Australian dollar, and that's with a very positive election result over the weekend, meaning that you got a very pro-business government, and it was not expected by any pollster. So it was quite a surprise to the market, and yet the Australian dollar still remains fairly weak.
What I find interesting is that when I asked you what you would be trading, anticipating an economic slowdown, you didn't mention equities or treasuries.
Well, I would get to that. The treasuries, I think, are ridiculously priced. So, you know, I'm looking for steepeners. I've been very out front on that because the debt situation in the U.S. bothers me. So I would keep my buying to within nothing longer than 5 years, absolutely nothing longer. Because again, I keep coming down to this situation where the United States is running a $1 trillion deficit with a fairly robust economy. So if the economy starts to slow down, I want to be in steepeners. I think again, you have to be a bad investment advisor to have anybody buying U.S. debt outside of, I would really say 3 years, but I'll be leaning go 5 years. Anything beyond that is to me ridiculous. First of all, it doesn't cost me much. The 2-10 yield spread is 15 basis points. So if I can buy 2-year and shorten my duration by 8 years, and only pay away 15 basis points, sign me up. Yeah, to me that's a much more responsible position to take.
So as we record today on May 23rd, you told me this morning that you bought some gold. Why?
Mm-hmm. Well, I bought them. I've been waiting. We made a nice test of the 200-day moving average for the second or third time. And with the European elections starting today, today's May 23rd, and they run through the 26th, I think that there's going to be some negative fallout for the European political situation, not that they need any more than they already have, and with Britain. So this uncertainty, coupled with what I've seen in the interest rates, the fact that, I'm looking at the euro dollar, even the DEIS 19 euro dollar is up 6 basis points, meaning that yields are down. DEIS 20 is 10 basis points it's moved this morning. That's a hefty move, and the gold has been under pressure. So there's all this uncertainty, and I'm not talking about war because, again, I don't buy gold when war. I might buy it for a quick trade on any outbreak of hostilities, but it's not a place where you go. The gold is much more of a monetary phenomenon. And with more political uncertainty in Europe, it puts a lot more pressure on the ECB to remain in negative rates far longer, which also puts pressure on the United States Fed, whether people want to admit it or not. It does, because if you listen to Richard Clarida, he'll tell you that the Fed does pay attention to international concerns, and rightfully so. Of course they do. They've never wanted to admit it. They've always talked about a dual mandate. I've always maintained, and you can go back and read in the blog for 10 years already, that it's a trident, meaning it's not a dual mandate. It's three. And that's because it has to sustain because of its role as a reserve currency, it acts as the ballast for international liquidity situations. And I think that's what we're seeing.
I want to talk a little bit more about the gold trade. First of all, where do you think you're wrong on this trade? And talk to us about where your projected targets are for gold.
Well, you know, I don't really do targets. I can look at a chart and read retracement numbers and where they should go based on, you know, certain measures. But I don't like to pick targets. But I think that gold has a lot going for it, because I think it's also a China-Russia situation with trying to avoid being totally reliant on the dollar. I think that they're serious about that. And I think the world situation, because of geopolitical events, is looking for an alternative to just the dollar as a reserve currency. And if China wanted to ramp up the yuan, they have to make it a hard currency, meaning they'll have to back it by some hard assets. And I think the Chinese are planning on doing that, which is why they've been such massive buyers of gold. There are, but I, you know, and people say, well, you know, gold has performed badly. It has, but when I've been long gold, I'm always short either the euro, the Swiss, the yen. I'm short currencies against it. And I think, well, okay, the dollar can do what the dollar wants to do in the short term, and it won't hurt me. But I've got three major central banks. Three. The Swiss National Bank, I would say, is a major central bank. The Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank, all with well-defined negative interest rates. Well, that gives me an incentive to hold gold, because people say, well, gold doesn't pay you anything. You know what? Holding the Swiss franc doesn't pay you anything either. In fact, you pay them. Holding the euro doesn't really pay you anything. Yes, I can go out and buy Italian 10-year bonds. In fact, I'm looking at them now. But do I want to own Italian 10 years? Yeah, it's not my choice. I can buy 2 years. I can buy shorter term. But in Germany, going out 10 years is negative 12 basis points. In Japan, it's negative 6 basis points out to 10 years. Even France, which I would argue is a basket case from a fiscal perspective, they're paying me a whole 29 basis points. 29 basis points to hold 10-year debt? No, sorry. There's other things I'd rather own in the short term. And you know what? And I'd like to see gold being used in a currency way. In fact, there's a guy who's read my blog for years out of Canada, who's put together a business based on putting what he has called gold in motion, which is using gold. He will store your gold in your own account, in your own vault. It's your gold. It's all serial numbered, and you can use it to finance your credit cards. So instead of sitting there doing nothing, and then if you know, let's say you took $20,000 worth of gold and put it into a credit card. If gold goes up in value, of course, you get more credit extended to you. And once you utilize that money, then you sign the gold over to him. But at least you've used it. You've put it in motion. So I'm looking for this to start to happen. I'm looking for the Chinese to start issuing gold-backed bonds. They're going to have to. The Russians are certainly setting up for it. So gold is interesting. Where does it go? If you monetize gold, gold will go into the $2,000 to $3,000 if you monetize it. Right now, it hasn't been, but ultimately, if you put it into motion, as I say, then you make it, then you increase its desirability as an asset.
Very interesting stuff. This is actually the first time I'm hearing about that, and I guess I'm gonna have to stay tuned to see what more comes out of what you just spoke about.
Anthony, just in 2012, the Bundesbank, which is even though they're not the power that they used to be, but they put out a paper, and the reason I have it is because I was suggesting that the IMF, for 15, 20 years, I've suggested that the IMF should be issuing gold-backed bonds, because people don't realize the IMF sits on a tremendous hoard of gold. Yes, it's from all its member nations, but they should be utilizing that gold, and I've always maintained that they should issue a gold-backed bond, an IMF gold-backed bond. And you don't have to do it dollar for dollar. You can do it 5-to-1. You know how many people would love to buy a bond secured by gold, and they would take a lesser interest rate? So, but the Bundesbank actually came out with a paper in 2012 on the real possibility of gold-backed bonds. So stay tuned, as I say.
It sounds to me as though this gold trade for you is really backed by the political headlines you're hearing right now and seeing, right?
Well, ultimately, yes. Not on any short-term headlines, but just the way they all play out going forward. This is a much longer time.
But an overall theme.
Right now.
Right, like an overall theme.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because I believe that governments are very irresponsible, and that they love to spend money, and they don't like to take the hit of being fiscally responsible. That's ultimately, and you see it. And yeah, you know what? Other things will do well too. Artwork, automobiles, stocks. They're, you know, most people don't realize that when you go into times of real inflation, in a lot of places where there's no alternative, stocks do well because people would rather own a hard asset, meaning a business, a factory, than to own, you know, the paper, the fiat currency, the money printed by a government. And, you know, there's a lot of real discussions going on that make me cautious. I've been around long enough and seen enough and read enough and studied enough that I'm cautious. When people tell me that debt doesn't matter, I get nervous, because the history of the world is debt matters. It always matters.
Let's stay on political headlines. One in particular that's really been impacting markets lately, and that's the trade war with China. How are you trading that?
Well, it's difficult because you go between tweets, and now you got the Chinese authorities tweeting as much as the White House, you know, and so you can get caught between them. I don't trade gold off of it. I'll tell you, because every time that you've tried, you've gotten caught in a bad situation. Last week, gold got through 1302 in June, and that took out a lot of trend line resistance, only to see gold drop $30 within 3 or 4 days. So I caution people, you do your homework, but be patient and let the market show you. You know, as you and I talk about many times, I'm not trying to show the market. I actually got out on that rally because I had been long and I wanted to see. I bought it back a little bit too early, but I let the market show me, because it didn't. There were other correlative factors that just didn't bear out. I go, oh, this is, you know, it's almost like they're setting it up for a major disaster. I'm watching it. But a lot of it is just, you know, coming off the politics. And, rightfully so, because the politics are. And the Chinese is much harder. If I buy gold, it's because when I read that the Chinese are massive buyers of gold and have been, and not just Chinese. I'm not talking about Chinese citizens or investors. I'm talking about the Chinese central bank. So when I'm looking at this trade war, it's another, I don't like the word recession. and the trade war. There's, you know, there's issues that have been overhanging for 20 years. You know, Bob Lighthizer, who's really the brains behind the whole Trump situation, he's been on the warpath since 2000, probably earlier, but certainly since 2001 when China joined the WTO, that China was let in and that it was a mistake and they weren't holding their feet to the fire. So now that he's in a position to really hold their feet to the fire and make some changes, this has been on the boil. And I was talking to a good friend of mine, Kevin McCarthy, this morning. He was really bright on international politics, amongst other things. But he was talking about the Tom Friedman article in the New York Times. And, you know, American corporations, when they went to China and were willing to give away, you know, 51% of the business to be there, were willing to succumb to the restrictions on revealing production secrets. They went there with eyes wide open because the first thing they wanted was access to a 1.3 billion customers. You know, go back and read all the books that were written back then. Oh, you know, China. Well, so now that it didn't work out quite the way that they had anticipated, there's a lot of, you know, now everybody's, you know, bash, you know, they can't bash the Chinese enough. But they went in knowing full well what they were looking for, and it just didn't work out. I remember in 2009 during the great financial crisis, Jeff Immelt of GE, who I have zero respect for, never did, never will, but he was lamenting how China was turning out for GE and that they were pulling some businesses out of China. This was 2009, so there's really, you know. Yeah. Have the Chinese taken advantage where they can? Yes. Every country on the make will do that. And that's not to justify it. I'm a big believer in the protection of intellectual property rights. But, you know, it's not quite as one-sided as now people are making the case. You know, we gave away a lot in the hopes of getting a lot.
Hey everyone, I hope you're enjoying the show so far, but I want to pause and thank one of our sponsors, Trading Technologies. I started using TT in the year 2000, and I love it. It is by far the best trading platform I have ever used, and I've tried a lot of them. With TT, you can trade the global markets from virtually anywhere in the world. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. I highly suggest you go try out TT, especially because you can try it for free. Just go to tryttnow.com and set up your account. I want to talk about your mindset trading this political news environment. You know, you've been doing this twice as long as I have, and you've had to adapt to so many different types of market environments. And this political news environment in my 20-year career as a trader has been definitely up there with, I would say, one of the most difficult times to trade, because I think that I'm not in as big of a hurry as I usually am to get in the market. I feel like I have to have a little buffer of time now when a market gets to an area based off of a headline that I'm looking at it going, be careful that you wish for that you got these prices right now. Is this headline going to extend through price, or was this an opportunity to get in? So I think there's a lot more thinking and watching that I'm doing nowadays than I have in the past. So I'm wondering, how are you approaching trading this type of political news environment?
You know, I'm much more mature. I'm much more patient. I will wait for my levels, as you know, as I talk about when I have wish levels sometimes, you know, where I have wish prices in when there's big news coming out. Like when there's, like yesterday, Fed minutes came out. I had orders in. Of course, the minutes were so boring that nothing got to levels that I was wishing for. But I look for levels where I would really like to put on a trade. If it's a gold currency trade, I look for valuations. So I'm always looking, and I'm searching for value, and I will be more patient in waiting for my valuations. I'll just be more patient. So that's what I've learned. And that's what I've come to respect more, because it's mandatory for me to be able to do that, to be more patient. And I wait, and I don't have to strike first. I'm not trying to tell the market again what it ought to do. I'm just trying to trade what is showing me and say, oh, there's opportunity here, or I've done my work and I have a big picture view, like what I'm doing with the yield curves right now. I'm being very patient. It gets up to the 200-day moving average under 210. I get out until it so solidly will close above there. Then I'll know that I'm really onto something. But right now, it's just trading. When it's stuck in between levels, great. I respect the levels, and I just try to trade within it with a viewpoint. I always have a viewpoint. So but I will wait. I will wait for it to develop.
I hear so many people talk about how you have to be patient. And for you and I, we know what that means. That means doing more homework and really knowing the areas you want. So when I think a lot of people out there say, you know, just be patient, let the market come to you. Well, yeah, but you have to know what you really want nowadays. You really have to do a lot more preparation. Because for me, at least, I used to put on feelers at areas I liked. So my preparation was, here's the areas I like. Here's the setups I liked. If they got there, maybe I put, you know, like I call it a feeler on, a few on, see how it would react, and then I'd get in. I'm not doing that as much now because I'm really not trying to be in first at all. I'm trying to really watch to see the reactions more and to see, because it's so hard to know if these headlines are going to have legs or not. I find that to be the most challenging part about this right now.
I agree with you. And my friend Steve McLennan, I don't know if you know Steve, but you probably know David. But Steve was a great trader, really bright thinker in the foreign exchange market. And we used to laugh because we used to have a term. We said, well, we're going to make this trade just to kind of feel out the market. And we used to say, we're sending some money on a recon mission. We used to call them soldiers. I'm sending a soldier on a recon mission, and I know he's not coming back alive. I don't do that anymore. First of all, it's too hard to make it. There's no edge in it. There's no built-in edge that we used to have. So I'm a little loath to do that. So I'm more patient that there's no soldiers going on recon missions that aren't coming back. It's just too difficult. So that's part of the waiting game. I will wait and I'll go, okay, I can really find a level here that suits me. And the algos will deliver that level to me.
Yep.
Trust me. If you're patient, the algos will deliver.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about putting in those, I think you said wish levels, right? Areas to where you're like, you know, maybe they get there, maybe they don't, but that's an area, like I had just said, we said, be patient, but do your homework. So those are levels that you're saying, unless it's some crazy over the top headline, that's an area that I'm going to trade, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Then I can make a stand there. Now, if I see it and it bounces out of there slightly, and I go, that's not enough of a bounce after X amount. Then I'll say, you know what? I got to reassess and I'll get out. But I've used it. I haven't gotten stopped out yet, but I haven't gotten the bounce out of there or the, you know, bounce down if I have sell levels on top. So that now my caution flag is up. But that's important. You want those red flags. Red flags are very important because we're a market should hold at. If it's going to hold its trend and the momentum and the bounce is not strong enough, you go, there's something else at work here, you know, beware. And I'll cut my position and watch to say, what am I missing here? There's something, you know, did I miss something? Is there something embedded in this piece that I missed? Da, 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 da. So those are really cautious. There was a guy who was a great trader, Mort Levy, who taught me, he had a phrase for it, what's wrong with the picture? Because he'd say to me, Ira, you do so much work to develop your trading plan that I understand that you can't go from being long to short. You're not built for it, but you should be getting totally out because when something ought to develop and it doesn't, beware. And that's important. You have to look for those red flags.
Absolutely. Ira, last question before I let you go. You and I were talking in a different conversation about the Judy Shelton interview with Santelli. You said some important things came out of that interview. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Well, Rick did a great job of getting her out and asking her a very serious question. Not about, you know, because she's supposedly being considered as a Fed governor. And you should never compromise somebody. Like, you know, I think one of the problems that Steve Moore had was that he was talking too much. And if you're talking too much, you're revealing more than you should about what your thoughts are. You can have a very broad-based view on monetary policy or what a role of a Fed governor, but you ought not to pin yourself down. And Rick did a really good job with her with that. But he did get her to talk about something that Rick and I actually had talked about between ourselves about 10 days ago, which was the importance of the IOER, which is the interest on excess reserves, which has become such an important tool for the Fed. In fact, I would argue it's by far the most important tool, because for all the people who talk about why there has been no inflation with all the QE by the Fed, it was the advent of the interest on excess reserves which kept all that money from being in play, because all the banks, they would take their excess reserves and park it at the Fed because they were earning a very nice return. They still are. They're still earning, with the Fed just cut it by 5 basis points. So if you're a bank and you've got excess reserves, well, why seek to lend them out? You can deposit them at the Fed overnight and get 2.35%. Pretty good, especially when they're not paying you anything on your money. So in fact, the business is so good. Bloomberg journalists have been, you know, one of them who's my daughter has been writing a piece about it called The Development of the Narrow, NARROW, the Narrow Bank. And the Narrow Bank is being put together by a guy who is at the New York Fed, as far as I understand it. And he's trying to create a bank that does nothing but take deposits from people like you and me and large pension funds and other large entities and put them on overnight deposit at the Fed using the interest on excess reserve, and then, you know, taking a little piece for themselves. But you're basically securing my deposit at the Fed, which is as safe as it gets, and I'm getting a real return. So I might be getting 2.2 on my money overnight, which is far better. Well, the Fed is actually pushing back. They don't want this to take place because, of course, it's going to be very disruptive to other banks, and they're not going to like it. Places that are paying nothing, you know, go check to see what Bank America pays you on your checking account, JP Morgan on your checking account, Wells Fargo, they pay you nothing. But if this comes into being, that game is going to end. They're going to have to start paying money market rates, which they used to do years ago, but now they pay you absolutely nothing. So this is now getting very interesting, but go listen to what Judy Shelton talks about as far as the interest on excess reserves. It's worth listening to. It's really a good interview. Really, Rick lets her talk, and talk she does without compromising herself, but really in an informative way, and gives you a view into what she thinks.
Once again, Ira, great insight as usual. Where can people find you on Twitter, and give us a website to check out?
The blog is Notes from Underground. You can go to iraharris.com. It'll pop up. You can register for it. You can go read them. I advise people to scroll back because there are a lot of things, Anthony. As you know, I'm looking at this stuff way ahead. And, you know, it's a problem sometimes as a trader, which is why I don't tout. You know, I'll talk about 200-day moving average levels like I did with the gold. But I'm not touting trades. I will talk what I think is important in the global macro world, but I'm not touting trades. I'm trying to give everybody a sense of what is really the underlying concerns if you're involved in global macro trading. So it's worth considering. So that's where you go, iraharris.com. Go to Notes from Underground.
What about Twitter for you, Ira?
You know, I don't even know. I tweet, and it just goes out there. So you got to register and find it. I wish I could tell you what my I can't.
It's Ira Harris. I know what it is. You don't even know what it is. It's Ira Harris, everybody. Right. But listen, yeah. And in all seriousness, you are my number one go-to read for macro. So everybody out there listening to this show, if you want to know what's happening in the macro world, go read Ira's blog. It's the best. Ira, you are the best. Thank you so much for coming on Futures Radio Show
again. Thanks, Anthony. Happy Memorial Day to everybody. I'm actually going to a movie tonight called The Cold Blue. It's only playing one. If you get a chance at your movie theaters, it's about people who flew B-17s and B-24s. My dad was a B-17 navigator, so it's only playing tonight until it goes. I think it's going to be in Netflix in June, but it's out in certain movie theaters. So I'm going tonight for the one showing to just honor my dad. It's Memorial Day, and it should be seen by people. So happy Memorial Day, and thanks to all the veterans who may be listening who really gave service, the ultimate service. So thanks.
Absolutely. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. Thanks for joining me, Ira.
All right, yeah. Thank you, bud.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.